Welcome back to Percival's Place on TalkZone.com. Here's Percy Dyer.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to Percival's Place. Today we have another special guest on the phone, and she is going to be talking about Long Island water and the contaminants and what we can do to have a healthier system. Adrian, how are you?
I'm very well. How are you?
I'm fine. So tell us, where do you work, and exactly what do you do?
Well, I'm the executive director of Citizens Campaign for the Environment. We're a bi-state organization. We work in Connecticut and all throughout New York. And we work on a wide variety of environmental protection issues. Today, though, we're going to talk about an issue I think that's near and dear to everyone's heart, which is protection of our drinking water and our beaches and our bays.
Okay, so let's talk about the actual water in itself. I understand from some of the things that I was reading about your organization and what it does. Let's just talk about the first. Let's just give people a background in terms of how do we have the drinking water. So can you give us a rundown in terms of the aquifers and how the rainwater sort of seeps down from the ground into the aquifers and all that kind of business?
I sure can. First off, I think it's really important that people know 100% of our drinking water comes from underground. We are classified by the United States Environmental Protection Agency as what's called a sole source aquifer, which simply means 100% of the drinking water comes from underground. And we don't get our drinking water from New York City. Sometimes people think that it doesn't come from underground, mysterious underground rivers from Connecticut. That's sometimes people think that. It really is. It's in layers of rocks, rock formations and sand and gravel underneath Long Island. And that's the good news and the bad news, because the bad news is that everything we pour on the surface of Long Island can, and many times does, seep down into that drinking water source, mix with it, and unfortunately contaminates it. So it could be pesticides, it could be sewage discharge, volatile organic chemicals, you know, from industry, whatever it may be.
Oh my. So, okay. So basically the rocks and the sand are acting as a filtration system, correct?
Well, they act as a filtration system, but the problem is they don't filter out contaminants.
Yeah, right. Well, okay. So, you know, I was reading something about, you know, and I guess this is similar. I was reading about the spring water from a particular, what island is that? I think that's Fiji. And Fiji has a system, something to that. But they're saying that it's filtered through rocks and that kind of thing. And it gives this kind of spring water type of a deal. So I guess that's the same thing with here. Unfortunately, as you're just saying that we're probably contaminating our water system through pesticides and lawn, you know, lawn care and all this kind of other stuff and what have you. So what can we do to prevent those pesticides from seeping down into our water?
Well, we can actually do a lot of things. The first thing is we cannot use these pesticides. I mean, you know, for goodness sakes, we have to think about the fact that pesticides are all poisons. That's what classifies them as pesticides. They're designed to kill things. Insects, weeds, rodents, fungus, they kill. That's what happens. So the problem is that we put those toxics on our lawns and our gardens. It mixes with the rainwater or with the sprinkler system, and it seeps down, and then we end up drinking it. So if we wouldn't put it in our glass of iced tea, then why are we putting it on top of our drinking water supply? It's the same thing, metaphorically speaking. So
okay.
That's one thing is, you know, look, you might have to live with a couple more dandelions. But, you know, we like to say a dandelion hasn't killed anybody, but, you know, pesticides have adversely impacted us.
Right. Okay. So, well, I guess this is going back now to another subject that you must deal with, the law. I mean, if you can prove this to you know, our congressmen and our senators that, you know, what you're saying is absolute truth, then why haven't they taken the ball up and, you know, decided, well, you know what, we're going to outlaw this and we'll have to find another way to get rid of the dandelions and all that other stuff. I mean, why haven't they taken that up on a large scale?
It's a great question, and it's a very legitimate question that you're asking. And the problem is a number of things. Number one is the science is still, there's big gaps. So in other words, they know, for instance, that a drinking water standard for some of the most common pesticides on Long Island, for instance, might be 5 for such pesticides as, let's say, atrazine, which is a weed killer.
Okay.
So we're allowed to drink, believe it or not, up to 5 parts per million of atrazine. But, you know, you could actually have in your glass 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 pesticides in your glass of water, all of which are legally allowed to be there in very tiny, tiny quantities. But what we don't know is what is the interaction of all of these pesticides on our body. The science doesn't know. They have not looked at what is the overall impact of a multitude of chemicals interacting with our bodies at any given time or over a long period of time. And we like to say what we don't know can hurt us. So one answer, you know, to your question is that the science hasn't caught up with the problem yet.
I got you.
The second thing that's really a problem is all of these poison industries have lobbyists. So, for instance, the pesticide industry, the chemical industry, they all lobby. In the halls of Albany, in the halls of D.C., at your local legislature, and they are representing the corporate interest. They're not representing the public interest. So what groups like we do, Citizens Campaign for the Environment, is we'll be out there lobbying for public health, protection of clean, safe, you know, pure water. And that's a lobby battle that occurs.
Right. So you need,
I would like to say.
Right. you need some strong advocates to come along with you. In other words, these people are probably have been there a little longer. They've been able to dig in a little bit more deeper in the trenches, and they're able to influence the law a little bit in their favor, basically.
Not a little bit, a lot.
Yeah, I'm trying to be diplomatic. I'm trying to be as diplomatic as I can about it. Oh boy.
That's my problem. This is my advantage. Is I'm an activist. I don't have to be diplomatic. I can tell people the exact truth, as bad as it is. But industry and pesticide lobbyists, chemical lobbyists, they don't have a little bit of influence. They don't have a little bit of access. They don't have a little bit of power. They have a lot of all those three things. They have a lot of money, a lot of access, a lot of power, and a lot of influence. So it's not really a fair playing field, but if it wasn't for the different environmental groups or public interest groups, you know, up there really representing the public, it wouldn't be a battle at all. So, you know, it is what it is, but I have to tell you, you know, we use the power of the public's voice to battle against the corporate dollars, and that's what we do.
Okay. Well, as my diplomatic skills increase, I have to be as neutral as I can right now. But when I go on television, I think I'm going to have some people like yourself on, and let's see if they they'll want to do battle on television. So let's see.
I'm up for that battle.
I'm sure you are. So let's see. Here's a question for you. So what I was reading, and I want you to elaborate on this a little bit. The average person accumulates 6 pounds of household hazardous waste per year.
Yep, that's right.
Okay, let's talk about that a little bit. How does one accumulate that kind of hazardous waste? What's going on?
Okay, what that simply means is that unfortunately, when we go to the grocery store and we walk down that cleaning aisle, we actually probably think all those chemicals and all those bottles and cans and spray jars have all been safe, but they're not safe. So we'll pick up some, you know, oven cleaner, we'll pick up some detergents, maybe you'll get some extra motor oil to put in your car because you're going to add oil yourself, or some antifreeze, or whatever it happens to be, pesticides that you're going to use in the home, you use ant spray. And so all of these things accumulate at the bottom of the sink, as we know, right? You open up that cabinet, there's all those, this jewelry cleaner, whatever that happens to be.
Right.
And then there's a little bit left at the end of the can, and you want to throw it out. But you can't throw it out in your regular garbage because that's not safe because those really are toxic chemicals. And so what people need to do is stop throwing out those what's now termed household hazardous waste in the regular garbage because we don't want it to go to an incinerator and we don't want it to go to a landfill somewhere. So what you need to do is each town has a collection system where they will take these this material and dispose of it safely. So it will go to a household, it'll go to a hazardous waste facility and not be allowed to enter into the drinking water or into the air.
That's fantastic. Now, every town has that. So is there some kind of, is there a scheduled time for it that every town does that in here on Long Island?
That's a great question, too. Each town is a little bit different. Some of the towns have permanent facilities like Huntington, where people could go, you know, any time of the day and just drop it off. Some of the towns don't have those permanent facilities, but they'll schedule days throughout the year. So each person just has to call their town and find out what their system or their process is. Because as out of the 13 towns we have on Long Island, it's a little bit different in each one.
Right, exactly. So, so that's actually pretty good. The question then is, how does one, I guess it's different for every town because I imagine you can probably put it out in maybe some towns or some other towns. You probably have to just go to the place in and itself and deliver this yourself.
Yes, correct? Just drop it off. That's right. That's right.
See, there it is. Okay. All right. So we'll have to figure out. So I have no idea what the town of Hempstead really does. I know I know it comes through all of the time. But, in terms of telling the listeners exactly, I'll have to post that and get that, and get those schedules up for everybody to view. That's good. Well, I'm glad to hear that. All right. So let's talk about some of these volatile organs that the organic compounds contaminating the groundwater.
Okay. Let's talk about it. But this is going to be like the bad news bears part of the program.
Yeah, I know. Well, yeah, I tell you what, Adrian, we're going to take a quick break.
Okay.
And we'll leave that for the last half of the show. Okay?
That's fine.
Okay.
And now, back to Percival's Place on TalkZone.com with Percy Dyer.
Alrighty, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Now, Adrian, so we're going to talk about the bad stuff that's going into the water. So, so give it to us.
Okay, we're going to talk about volatile organic chemicals, and I just want to mention pharmaceutical drugs as well.
Oh, yeah, well, we'll get to that. I know, we're going to definitely talk about that. And, I wanted to talk about how to properly dispose of that as well, because that's another point. You know, but talk about this one first.
Well, volatile organic chemicals really come from two sources. One is from industry that used to dump a lot before the laws were changed. And some of it, as you pointed out earlier, from those household hazardous waste chemicals that we use in the home. And then, unfortunately, sometimes we dump them down the sink or we dump them in the backyard thinking we will just put them in the earth. The earth will magically cleanse them. So there's two sources. One is us, the consumer. We're a big source of this volatile organic chemicals, and the other, unfortunately, is industry. And the reason that this is a really big problem is that your volatile organic chemicals have numerous health ailments associated with them. Everything from being carcinogenic, meaning causing cancer, or it could be a neurotoxin, which means nervous system disorder, reproductive disorder, immune system problems. Everything, you name it. And these are, some serious health effects. We really we don't want them in our water, obviously. You wouldn't be mixing them with your morning coffee. And so we really have to be judicious about keeping them out of the groundwater.
Exactly. So that brings me to this point. You know, we these properties that are going in there, you know, you can detect methanol, you can detect benzene, you can detect chloride, all this kind of stuff that, you know, is bad for you, that causes cancer, that causes kidney failure, that causes, you know, diabetes, for goodness sake, and all these other things. And no one is really sounding the alarm except for guys like yourself. So it's amazing to me that, you know, we don't have some other things in place that really, you know, talk about this a little bit more, because who wants to come down with this is why we're dying so young, you know, with cancer and all these kind of other ailments that's going on. So it's amazing.
Well, you're exactly right. And the problem is we've become way too casual and way too accepting about having poison show up in our drinking water and our air and our land. And unfortunately, we've kind of just accepted that to some degree in society, and we need to stop accepting it, because we have too many unexplained and unexplainable medical conditions, medical ailments, cancer clusters, and things going wrong. And I'm sorry, there is indisputable facts that association with chemical exposure and toxic exposure has adverse health effects on us as humans. And so we need to get back to the guiding principles of clean, safe, pure water is a goal and should be every person's right. That's our goal. That's our work.
That's exactly right. So here's my next question then. Here on Long Island, I don't know about the other states, but have you guys been able to track where there are more contaminants than other places on Long Island?
Well, the answer is somewhat. There are a number of plumes, groundwater plumes, which means an area concentrated with toxics under the ground with volatile organic chemicals. But then you have all of the pesticides. There are literally thousands of wells on Long Island that have some level of pesticides in them.
Okay.
It's overwhelming. So that's why for us, and actually not only Citizens Campaign for the Environment, but other environmental groups have joined together now. And next month, I'm happy to say, we're launching a brand new island-wide campaign, the Long Island Clean Water Partnership. And we're going to working from one end of Long Island to the other, working on prevention of pollution, prevention of sewage from going into our drinking water, of pesticides and volatile organic chemicals and pharmaceutical drugs, because it's cheaper and safer and healthier to prevent the contamination than it is to continue to try to clean it up after the fact.
Well, you know what I'd like to do then is right before, what are the dates next month you're going to be doing that?
Well, when we're going to be launching a live website that will have all the information on it. There'll be radio and TV commercials starting next month. So, you know, it'll be holistically done throughout the month.
Oh, that's good. Okay. So you're going to do this throughout the month. That's fantastic. Oh, my congratulations on that.
Yeah, we're excited. And I think we really need a renewed effort on Long Island to get our state legislators, the Assembly and the Senate, and our county legislators and our county executives engaged in protecting drinking water. And we understand that, you know, they're very engaged in protecting and in kind of rebooting the economy. We get that. We live here, too. But we have to do two things at once. We have to reboot the economy and protect our environment and the public's health at the same time. Those goals should be, you know, Siamese twins, not separate ones.
That's right. Okay, so let's talk about the let's talk about this elephant in the room now. This pharmaceutical disposal. How do we go about that?
This is a really a brand new and emerging problem, actually.
I know it is.
Yeah, it's brand new science, but unfortunately, it's real. So, for instance, on Long Island, the United States Geological Service took about 70 samples of groundwater and found that 40% of those samples had one or more trace amount. This is very small amounts of pharmaceutical drugs, the most common ones being antibiotics and also anticonvulsants, followed very closely by codeine and then caffeine. So they are showing up in the water supply, surface waters as well. So we need to make sure when we have those unwanted and unused prescriptions left over in our homes or at the hospital or at the long-term care facility, that those are going to an incinerator. They are not flushing them. Please, for the public out there, please do not flush all those unwanted or unnecessary prescriptions that you no longer need. Because when you flush them, they go into the groundwater or they go into the bays. And either one is a bad option for us.
Exactly. Now, I happen to work in a medical facility at the moment, part-time. And, you know, that is a message that I think that people really need to know. And so, you know, I would recommend that we start hitting these health facilities, medical facilities, and giving them literature to hand out to these people as they're prescribing medication, that they can get one of these little, you know, note things and understand that, you know, if you're finished with your medication, you know, and you don't need to take any more, don't throw it down the toilet.
Well, I have to say, you must be clairvoyant, because that is exactly one of the things that we are working to do right now. That's going to be part of the campaign that gets launched in the next couple of months. We need everyone participating, right? Everyone has to be a steward of the earth. Everyone has to be steward of clean drinking water. I mean, we're talking about Long Island's very ability to be sustainable, to be lasting, to be healthy and safe, and a place that we're going to want to continue to live and bring up our children. And the best thing we can do, frankly, is have clean water, clean beaches, safe, healthy when people go swimming, clean water where we drink it, we're healthy as well. This is a basic necessity that unfortunately has been ignored for far too long. And we're not going to allow it to be ignored anymore.
Okay, so before I forget, can people contact your organization?
Of course. We have an office on Long Island here in Farmingdale. They can please go to our website at citizenscampaign.org. And we have a very extensive website on a multitude of issues. They can, peruse it and hopefully learn a few things on it. And, and our office is here in Farmingdale Village.
That's fantastic. Okay, so I have just one more question for you, and then I'm going to let you go. Well, let's talk about nitrates and why is that a now I happen to be a big guy for fish tanks, and so I know all about nitrates and all that kind of stuff. But for people who don't know, can you explain what nitrates are and nitrites and all that kind of business and what it means in terms of waste?
Exactly. Yes. On Long Island, we're really talking about just nitrogen from sewage. So we have a potpourri of sewage treatment plants, many of which will discharge the treated waste back into groundwater, but many of which also put the treated waste in our bays, like the Bay Park sewage treatment plant in the town of Hempstead. Unfortunately, all of this nitrogen that's still left over from sewage after being treated is now becoming a contaminant. It's polluting groundwater, it's causing excessive algal blooms, which can be very toxic on Long Island. Unfortunately, we have now four separate toxic algae blooms. One is red tide, which is so toxic it actually can cause paralysis or death, which is pretty darn serious.
Right.
The other is brown tide, which isn't toxic to humans, but it kills fish and shellfish.
Right.
We have a rust tide. We have a blue-green algae, which actually killed a dog that went into a lake out on the east end of Long Island that had this algae in it. And it was a very healthy dog, and it came out and died two hours later. So, we have some serious problems with the proliferation of the amount of nitrogen coming from sewage in our drinking water and in our coastal waters. And part of our campaign is to work with the state of New York and drive the permissible level of nitrogen down. The current standard is 10 parts per million. We need to get it down to 2 parts per million. And we need particularly our state senate and our assembly members to help us to get on the bandwagon, support the legislation that is actually done now, which will help drive that number down.
Fantastic. Well, Adrian, I want to thank you for coming on.
Well, thank you for having me, and I look forward to doing it again.
Absolutely, and I'm going to invite you now on to my television program in the fall when we finish with the logistics. You're welcome to come on that show and do battle, okay?
That's what I live for. You let me know when.
Okay, no problem. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
All right. Talk to you later. All right, ladies and gentlemen, that was this episode of Percival's Place. Come back next week, and we're sure to have some more exciting guests for you.